Welcome to the HR Room Podcast, the podcast series from Insight HR, where we talk to business leaders from around Ireland and share their advice on how to create the HR systems and workplace culture that's right for your business. For show notes and bonus content, simply visit www.insighthr.ie/podcast. And remember, if you need any HR support, get in touch with us at Insight HR. Whether it's conducting a complex workplace investigation, filling a gap by providing you with a virtual or on-site HR resource, or providing advice via our HR support line, we'll help you resolve whatever human resources challenge your business is facing. Okay, let's get started.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the HR Room Podcast. In today's episode, as we come to the end of 2021, we're looking ahead to 2022, and in particular, the jobs market. We'll be discussing what the market will look like in 2022, what the data from the past year has taught us, and what organizations must do to win talent and, more importantly, keep talent. And joining us to talk about this topic today, we're delighted to be joined by Donal O'Donoghue, Managing Director at global recruitment firm Sanderson, President of the National Recruitment Federation, Business Advisor and Media Contributor. How are you, Donal? Thanks for joining us.
Very well, Owen. Thanks for having me on.
Brilliant. And of course, we also have our very own Mary Cullen, Founder and Managing Director here at Insight HR. Hello, Mary. How are you?
I'm good, thanks, Owen. And you're very welcome, Donal.
Thanks, Mary.
Brilliant. So we'll jump right in. We'll come to yourself first, Donal. So look, I suppose we all know it's been a turbulent couple of years for, I suppose, all industries. Can you talk to us a little bit about how the jobs market has been affected by the pandemic?
Sure. I think I'd sum it up as saying it's probably been the most radical swing in the labor market that I've seen in my 25 or 26 years in the recruitment business. So to go back to the shock that we had in March, April 2020, where we had a market that went from full employment to, half a million people on the live register, the unemployment rate hitting 23%, certainly a very sharp shock. But what I think many of us braced ourselves for at that time was something that would be similar to the global financial crisis. And I think everybody in Ireland remembers how deep and how long and how painful that economic downturn was. So I think what's remarkable about this cycle has been just how rapid the recovery has been. So if you think about it, if we look at the LinkedIn data, by that kind of period, April to June 2020, hiring had dropped by 40% on the same period the previous year. So it was quite devastating. And when you think about the fact that just a year later, by the following summer, that we had kind of got back to pre-pandemic levels of job vacancies and hiring, the rate of return, I think, is what was really most marked and most memorable about this iteration of a labor market crash. Very steep crash and a very, very sharp recovery.
Yeah, I think obviously one thing that has obviously really kind of kicked off, and it's always been there, but something that has really seen a boost in the past couple of years has been remote working. Are we seeing that reflected in the market as much as I suppose the discussion would suggest? Are companies advertising it more? Are people asking for it more? Any thoughts on that, Donal?
Yeah, I guess it kind of ties together. So if you think about what we were just saying there, so we had this really sharp shock period, and then this very rapid recovery. And I think one of the things that happens when you have an economic downturn or you have a market like that is that there's a natural attrition rate and there's a natural churn that happens in the employee life cycle. And rightly so, those people that were at the stage where they thought, in the beginning of 2020 that it might be time to move on or look for a new opportunity, they held on for dear life to the opportunity or to the role that they had. And then what we've tended to see is that, people are talking about the great resignation and so on. But what it actually was, in my view, is pent up demand, that people that had probably reached the point where they were ready to move on in early 2020 held on for an additional year. And as then we saw this rapid recovery where, by May 2021, there were more job vacancies internationally, not just in Ireland, but, pretty much every developed country saw more job vacancies than at pre-pandemic levels and even going back to very busy economic periods. And then you couple that with the pent-up demand of people actually having the confidence to come back to the market. I think that when you then kind of mix that in with the fact that remote working and hybrid work policies have come to the fore, And some employers have approached it in one way where they've kind of consulted with their teams and approached it in a particular way. And then other organizations maybe have mandated people to come back in a different way. So it's definitely on the recruitment side of things. It's the key consideration for people at the moment. And I think it's one of the key reasons why some of the attrition rates are higher in some organizations than they are in others.
Yeah, and I think that's probably something we've seen, Mary, as well, kind of regionally, I suppose, not just because we're based in Kilkenny in an industrial estate, it's much, much quieter than it would have been a number of years ago. But we're also probably hearing it more from our clients as well. Would that be right? That, I suppose, working from home really, because it kind of has taken off.
Definitely. We have worked with organizations to help them consult with their employees and develop their work models. But I think, as well as to add to your points, Donal, I think in some cases, employees during the pandemic sat back and judged what their organization were doing in terms of how they were interacting and engaging with them, the kind of supports that they were putting in place. Don't forget, so many people, particularly women, were minding children and homeschooling and taking on additional responsibilities in the home and trying to work in less than ideal circumstances. And I think ultimately judged the organization in terms of how they reacted and responded to that. And across our client base and from our peers in HR across the industry in Ireland, we could see that some organizations managed better than others. And also there were organizations out there who were offering enhanced benefits to people. So for instance, I was talking to my daughter who has a new baby, two years old, and another one on the way. And, for people like her, the benefits that an organization are offering around supports if there's another lockdown and emergency childcare. Her daughter's creche has been shut down a couple of times during the course of the pandemic, and she has required support so she could do her job. Having a two-year-old in the house and trying to work is no joke. So I think there's been a real mix in terms of the way in which people have looked at their organizations, the way in which they're now prioritizing what they want out of their life. And it's really flipped a bit, isn't it? It's now much more about your work fitting into your lifestyle rather than your lifestyle fitting around work. And that's a real change for me in terms of how you approach career. Certainly in HR, to get ahead when I started, you had to work all hours and be available to the organization. Late in the evening, early in the morning, long hours in an office. That was just par for the course. And it's amazing to see how that has flipped and changed for us all now.
Yeah, I think the two things that, or the two words that keep recurring in conversations that I've had over the last couple of years are trust and autonomy, because I think a lot of what you're describing there, Mary, are some of the things that I would have been guilty of looking at to view and to rate and to categorize a team member's performance. We looked at things like, who was in early, who grabbed a sandwich and had lunch at their desk because they were so busy and stayed on late in the evening. And we weren't so much at times measuring productivity or output or performance as feeling assured that people were putting good levels of input, good levels of effort. So I think that is that trust piece, I think, has been a really interesting social experiment. And of course, we're talking about the roles that can be delivered remotely. But I think that's definitely been a journey for hiring managers, for employers. And then I think the second part on autonomy has really been the fact that people have been able to fit their working life around their home life and realize that it's not an either or situation, that you can actually be really productive and really effective but some of the time that you might have spent sitting in traffic can be better spent doing other things. So I think that is where we're seeing a kind of a driver of attrition, in that people that have taken that autonomy back have proven that they're able to be productive and but equally to fit around their home life or their personal circumstances. They don't want to give that back now. So that's where the employers that aren't working in the consultative way that you've described, the ones that are mandating, let's get back to normal so that we can feel the way we felt before. I think that's the big risk.
I think also, Donal, when you're asking people to come back into an office as a knowledge worker, obviously, and obviously in this discussion, we're kind of excluding all those frontline workers. I think it's important that we mention them at some point in the discussion as well. But, you know, to bring people into an office and have them sit and do a job that they feel they could do more effectively at home is really problematic, because if they're not coming for a specific purpose, then you have got people to travel into work, take out a couple of hours of their day and do what they were able to do at home anyway. So the thoughtful approach from employers around, well, what will people actually be doing in the office if they're just sitting with their headsets on in the office at their computer or desktop, then people are going to be frustrated. And we're certainly hearing that out there in the marketplace, that, you know, there's frustration about that. I don't want to travel in on a bus to do what I actually do at home. I don't want to sit in traffic to do what I could do more peacefully and more thoughtfully at home. So I think employers really do need to think carefully about what and why are we doing.
And actually, what's interesting there is that the whole function of the office has changed in this very short period of time, because the function of the office historically was around communication. You know, in the old days, the post arrived to the office, and if you wanted to phone the company, you phoned the company phone number and somebody put you through to the person you wanted to speak to. So it was, you know, about communication and collaboration. But it's definitely shifted from that purely communication to purely collaboration space. And I think you're right, with hybrid working patterns, people are happy to come in a particular number of days, but they want to know why they're coming in, and they want to make sure that it's productive. Because I think the other thing that is interesting to look at when you think about personality and trait theory and people who are maybe higher in extroversion or lower in extroversion, and the role that people perform, some roles are far easier to perform if you have a bit of peace and quiet to be able to close a door and do some writing or some research or some planning. And then some roles, you need that extra bit of collaboration. So it's about breaking those tasks, or breaking the job function into the tasks, and seeing where they better delivered and where is the individual better suited to delivering those tasks.
Yeah, and the offices are empty. I don't know, when you go into your offices, certainly in our offices, you know, we can only facilitate a certain amount of people in the office at any one time. So we cannot go back to normal. We cannot bring the entire team back into the office in a safe way. So most offices are operating at a much smaller capacity, really. So it doesn't feel the same anymore either, even though it is not nice to interact and it is nice to go and have lunch with someone. But there's nothing stopping you going in, having lunch with a colleague anyway, without actually having to spend the day in the office. So I do think that it comes back down to that thoughtful approach from the leadership team about, why are we doing this?
And what do you hear from your clients, Mary? Are you hearing that people saying that generally we're never going back to the old ways of working, that it'll always be hybrid? Or would you hear an element of organizations that are really hoping to get back to, you know, when it's safe to do so, to the previous ways of working?
It's really mixed. I think HR practitioners are you know, guiding organizations and leadership teams in a way to say, well, look, we're not going back to what we used to have. But I do see at the really senior levels, maybe at CEO level and some of those levels that, you know, there are concerns, and some of those concerns are valid around, you know, how do we do this? In reality, managing a hybrid workforce is actually quite challenging because there's so many issues that you have to take into consideration for every meeting that you hold, because you can't exclude people. So the organizations that have mandated, you know, everybody comes in on the same days together, and we'll all be together, and we'll run some of our meetings together on those dates, they risk upsetting people because the employees aren't able to plan their lives in the way that they want to. And if you have people out of the office and in the office at the same time and having meetings together, then does one, those who attend the offices have a greater advantage than those who don't? And how successfully are we doing all that? I don't think the technology is really there yet to make those meetings more effective, because if you're sitting side by side with people and we're all on different calls to different places, all on video calls, how noisy is the office environment going to be? How distracting is it going to actually be? And how thoughtful have organizations been about how they're planning it? The bigger the organization, the greater the budget, the snazzier the setup. For those organizations that invested in, you know, 2019, 2020 in their office spaces, did they do a big redesign? Not a lot of them.
I think kind of slightly building on that, Mary, I suppose my question is this good for Ireland in the sense that obviously you have a lot of regional companies within Ireland. You also have Ireland at the periphery of Europe with the workforce, that kind of thing. As you mentioned there, a lot of bigger companies have had that time and money to invest in these technologies. So maybe the bigger companies will benefit more, but we're also seeing regional companies now being in the war for talent a lot more because people are everywhere. So I suppose for both of you, maybe yourself first, Donal, what were your thoughts on how, I suppose, regional companies and how Ireland itself can kind of pounce on this?
Well, I suppose from my background, being in a recruitment organization, it was almost a breath of fresh air, because we had organizations, for example, I'm thinking of one in particular that was based in the west of Ireland, that's a very hiring very highly skilled software developers and software engineers, and the key consideration was always trying to find people that had developed really good skills in either London or Dublin or elsewhere, but that had some kind of connection to the west of Ireland to attract them back home. And what we saw for the first time when they realized that actually they now had access to talent that was based anywhere within Ireland, as we were saying before we came on air, as long as the person is compliant where they're tax resident, we can really access those skills now. And that was a huge benefit for a regional organization to really compete with on a global level, not just on a national level, but on a global level, because there's great talent in Ireland. And I think one of the things that's important to say, I think Mary, you touched on it there a second ago, was just about the HR community, whether HR teams in organizations or HR consultants like yourself. I think that HR really stepped up in the last 18 months into what was a very difficult role in terms of bringing leadership teams and CEOs on a journey that had lots of, it was a bit like more of a maze than a journey, because there were so many different approaches and different thinking. And actually what HR really needed to do that I observed they did really well was to kind of maintain that cool head and that sense of balance and the ability to I suppose support people through times of loss and bereavement and job losses and changes and transformations. And actually I think it was a really big win for organizations that had access to really good HR thinking. So I think it's just, seen as we're on a HR podcast, I think it's not often said, but I think the HR community stepped up and really delivered.
Yeah, and in some ways, they've had a hard time too. And I do like to acknowledge it on this podcast that, you know, in HR, the hours are often long, you know, and I'm seeing the move with HR people as well. If you even look at LinkedIn, Donal and Owen, you'll see the amount of HR people who've moved. I see, you know, because you're notified through LinkedIn when people do move, and I'm quite surprised at that. And again, I think that's reflective of, you know, people who have maybe felt not appreciated or burned out, or again, their organisations not accommodating the, you know, kind of work from anywhere in Ireland approach. I know HR people who wanted to move to different locations away from the office and really being challenged by the senior team, even though other people in the organization were working from different locations at that time. The sense that HR needed to be close to the office to do, I'm not quite sure what, in the office, but there was that real sense. So you are seeing that kind of shift there in terms of that move in the profession. And I've also seen resignations from HR people who simply couldn't manage the responsibilities of children at home and work and the pressures that the pandemic brought with such a long lockdown, where people just felt, look, this is unsustainable from a family perspective. I have this big job that requires a lot of focus, and I simply cannot do it by virtue of the fact that my children are here.
I think, I suppose, what this really kind of all adds up to is it is probably going to be quite a competitive year next year for talent, not just across HR, across every industry. I suppose with HR people having been, I suppose, under the cosh for the past couple of years, maybe we can give them some advice to help them. So I think, how can HR teams, recruiters, organizations kind of stand out and get ahead in the war for talent next year? I'll come to yourself for that one, Donal.
Yeah, it's an interesting one, because it is going to be really competitive. So if you look at the global picture, I saw a piece of research by recruitment firm Manpower, which they've been doing the same research since the 1960s. And they surveyed, I think it was 45,000 employers across 43 countries. And of those, 15 countries are reporting the highest ever levels of job vacancies since they started this research back in 1962. We've seen that same thing. If you look just across the water in the UK market, the busiest ever on record, 1.1 million unfilled job vacancies at the moment, and their unemployment rate down to 4.5% at this stage. And we're seeing the same thing in Ireland. Certainly the busiest that I can recall in my 25 or 26 years in this business. And looking at the data sources from here across the job boards like Indeed and LinkedIn, you know, vacancy rates are incredibly high. So it is going to be a very, very competitive market. And I think you're right, Owen, it's not just about recruitment and attraction. It's all about engagement and retention. And there are huge opportunities for HR professionals across those disciplines as well, because, you know, what can you do to stand out? I think it's all coming back to defining a really current employer value proposition and bringing that to life across social and digital. Because, you know, when we're removed from the physical world, which we largely have been for almost 2 years now, we're seeing and we're getting a sense for how culture is transitioning to the digital world. So I think bringing that employer value proposition to life across social and digital channels is really important, and great to see, you know, like the likes of this, you know, good conversations that are happening across podcasts, across LinkedIn Lives and other kind of media like that, I think is really important. I think the career framework piece is really important, because when we're onboarding new talent, being able to, in a remote world, give them a clear picture for what opportunity lies, you know, further down the road within their organization is really important. And I think the other point that is probably worth considering is around mentoring, you know, for people joining organizations at various levels, to make sure that they have some support from a peer or a mentor who can help them on that journey and help them to, you know, address some of the challenges that they might be dealing with around the kind of change that we're working through at the minute.
Same question to yourself, then, Mary. I suppose what can HR teams kind of look at to make sure they do not just get that talent in, but keep that talent as well, just building on what Donal has said.
I think a lot comes back to things like about employer branding. And I think that Donal is right in saying that, you know, organizations need to use their social, their digital, their websites to promote their offerings. And I'm still surprised at how few organizations have stepped away from the traditional job specification that they've been trotting out for absolute years, in terms of style and format, and you know, not even in some cases saying that a role is a work from anywhere role or a remote role. They're forgetting to put it up there. They're forgetting to put it on the job description. So it's really important that, you know, as the world of work is changing, that HR practitioners really look at their advertisements, at their the words that they're using, at the job specification itself, because that is what is going to make the difference. I think they also need to talk about leadership. So if an organization is talking about how its leadership has adapted to a new working model and what kind of supports they're putting in place for their employees, I think they could really jump ahead and gain advantage in that. It's important to talk always about peer support, mentoring, and all of that, but to bring to life what working in your organization is going to look like as a new model, not just the same old standard stuff that's trotted out there. It's one of the things I've really noticed, Donal, that the job advertisements aren't reflecting any major change. Neither are the websites. In fact, lots of organizations haven't updated their websites to reflect what's on offer. And they're really simple things because, you know, in a digital world, the first thing you're going to do is you're going to Google, you're going to look at Glassdoor, if there's anything on there about it, you're going to look at Indeed and reviews and all of those kind of things. And if you're not getting a good impression, or if you can't see at a glance that there might be remote or flexible working options there, then I might just move on quickly. I think some organizations as well are posting out there things about the kind of specialist supports that they put in place. I saw one organization talking about having 10 days childcare support or elder support in the event that your carer or childcare provider shuts down or becomes ill or something like that. And I've spoken to a few women with young children, and they have said, yeah, I would work for that organization because when the creche closes or when the carer of my elderly parent becomes ill, I must take time off work to mind the child or mind the family member, and that's really disruptive to my job and creating a problem for me. So I think organizations can be quite crafty about the supports and the benefits and the things that they could put in place to support people at this time, given the really unique set of circumstances that are out there at the moment. It's very much about health, well-being, supports, care, humanizing, taking the, you know, approach that the people matter, because right now that's what people want to hear.
Yeah, definitely. And I do think there's an element of resistance or an element of caution on the part of some employers, because if you think about the, we were planning the kind of the phased and controlled return to the workplace for September, which has now been pushed out until spring of next year. And we've got public advice or public health advice that's, you know, still recommending that people work from home. But despite the fact that the government have done their consultation piece on the right to request remote working, we still don't have legislation in that place. So I think there's an element of, we've got some organizations that are taking a lead and that are doing exactly what you're describing, Mary, and they're trying to put their policies in place and they're trying to bring their culture to life. And that's a culture of well-being and support and taking that holistic view of the employee life cycle. And then I think there's another cohort that are saying, well, hang on, we'll just see how this plays out for another few months. So it's an interesting one. But I think the organizations that are taking the lead on this are the ones that are going to have a better advantage, to go back to your question, Owen, in terms of what can organizations do, because these are the things that really matter to people when they're at that job seeker stage. You know, if they're at that point where they're considering everything, and, you know, all things being equal, you know, a small difference in salary probably means less to somebody than the ability to properly set up their life around their work life.
It's also easier, isn't it, to job hunt? Because you can do an interview in the morning before you go to work, you know, in the evening, just after work, and it's not requiring travel or any of those things, because so much of it is now remote. And I think it's easier than ever to get a new job. And so many people will have ruled out. I know certainly when I was living in Dublin, you know, I ruled out certain parts of the city because it would have taken me hours to get across the city to that location. And now, well, if they're offering remote work practices and I really want to work there and I feel my career could benefit from it, there's no impediment to me working there. I don't have the commute. So if you're smart about it in HR, and I think it really does require HR teams standing back a little and thinking, right, what are we offering and how can we promote it? You know, there will be some people who want to go and work in an office. There will be some people who want to work fully remotely. There will be some who want a mix of both worlds. Be smart about how you're presenting all of that online on your website, and from what your employees are actually saying online and in the digital world about the kind of things that you're offering, because that's powerful and that will encourage people to at least look at your organization as a possibility.
Yeah, and I think that's a really interesting one, because from the candidate attraction side and the onboarding side, I think it's very interesting. But I think to touch on what you mentioned earlier, Mary, about managing in the hybrid workforce and ensuring equity of opportunity, you know, that people aren't out of sight, out of mind because they're working remotely. Access to promotional opportunities, access to being involved with different projects or different programs of work. That's a really interesting challenge for people managers and then for HR teams to bring people managers on. And I don't think any of us have the answer to it yet, because we're all still trying to figure it out.
In 5 years, in five years' time, we'll all know what we should have done. And up until then, it's about being creative, I think, as people involved in talent acquisition. I think it's very much about being creative now and using everything you have that you're proud of in the organization to promote it. But I mean, the same old basics are always there. Don't sell a pop, explain what it's really like, you know, make sure your managers are all talking the same language when they're hiring. You know, there's attraction and then there's retention. And, you know, you can tell someone anything at interview. And so often we hear in HR, well, the job simply was not as it was outlined to me at interview, and the opportunities weren't there, or the promises made to me weren't kept. And that is just so important and fundamental to retention.
Mm. And I think the other thing that's a really important part of the retention strategy, or the glue in it, is the culture of the organization and how you transition culture from the physical environment to the virtual environment to the hybrid environment is another one that definitely, when we look back on this 5 years from now, hopefully we'll have some good insights. But that's definitely a challenge, even when I think about our own organization and people that have joined in the last 12 months that have maybe met their colleagues for a cup of coffee on one or two occasions max. And as part of the retention strategy, buying into that organization's culture, that's a really tricky one at the moment.
And it's probably the key takeaway from today, isn't it? That I suppose first step is kind of look internally. Mentioned that word trust, like you said at the very top, Donald, it's about trusting the employees you have, putting things in place so that it's equitable, that everyone can contribute, but really kind of nailing down that culture. And then I suppose, as you both mentioned, it's kind of looking externally then, how do we approach this recruitment market holistically? How do we promote everything we have, our employer brand? And how can we be genuine about it, but use all the channels we have kind of available to us? Because as we said, it is going to be a very competitive 2022 and probably beyond as well. And we might come back in 5 years to see where we're right.
And one more thing to add to it, Owen, before we close it out, I think the other thing we've got to remind hiring managers in this market is to be swift. You know, time kills all deals. If you've got to the stage where you're down to the last couple of candidates and you're making a decision, don't hang about because the market is hot and good candidates are getting snapped up. So I think speed is important as well.
Steps to hire, some of the application forms are just so long and unwieldy that, you know, again, HR teams really need to think, do we need to capture absolutely everything in the application form, or could some of this wait to the actual interview? Because if we're putting off our candidates at the earliest possible stage and having them spend hours on applications, what are our chances? Particularly, I notice with, you know, your graduate entry positions, that the tolerance for completing these really long unwieldy application forms is not there. And again, you know, with generational differences and changes in the whole process, it's something that HR teams really need to think about, because the whole logic is that we're attracting talent, not putting off the talent.
And I think that's something that we spoke about recently, I think on a recent podcast with John Lee as well, Mary, is about that. The model, the pyramid model, it has now become flipped around. Now it's the employees, as it should have always been. Employees should have been the focus, the prospective employees, but now it's definitely something that's very apparent.
Do you know what? I think you're dead right. And that physical application process, when you think about candidate experience and you transition that to the virtual world, like we always think, if there are too many clicks in an online application process, you get candidate leakage. You get to the stage where somebody in a market that's this busy, if the application process is difficult, whether it's physical or it's virtual or digital, candidate experience is key.
And they talk. And they talk about it on their digital and social platforms about how difficult an application was. I have a 21-year-old applying to law firms at the moment through the graduate application process, and I don't think I've ever seen him more frustrated with the hours that are involved in doing it. Now, maybe it's a way of weeding out those who aren't prepared to put in the time and the effort. I still have a question mark about, you know, what are we really gaining if the applicants don't feel like they want to bother completing the application forms?
It's a good point. And even when you go back to the old school things of a well-written cover letter, there's still a great value and utility in that. But that's probably a whole different day's conversation.
And we will be in trouble, Donal, if we don't stop soon. I see Owen every now and then attempting to wrap up.
Take it away, Owen.
Really quiet.
No, it is a good topic. And I think, to be honest, Owen, we might even have you back again for another one in a few months when we have seen the massive changes in the market. Because I do think, as we said, 2021 has been wild, 2020 has been wild, but 2022 would probably be no different. We're still in that time of change. So definitely an exciting one for teams everywhere. So thank you again, Mary and Donald, for a very insightful discussion. Some great stuff there. And I'm glad we went down as long as we did, because there's so many tips there for employers. Absolutely. So we really appreciate it. Thank you to everyone for listening. We'll catch you next week for our next installment of our podcast. So don't forget to click subscribe and join the discussion on our social media channels. Make sure to check the show notes for useful resources related to today's topic. And as always, for HR consultancy services and management you can trust, get in touch with us today at insighthr.ie. Thank you, Mary. Thank you, Donal.
Thank you.
Thanks, Donal.
Thanks for joining us today on the HR Room podcast, the podcast series from Insight HR that helps you create the human resources systems and workplace culture that's right for your business. For show notes and bonus content, go to www.insighthr.ie/podcast. That's www.insighthr.ie/podcast. We'd love it if you subscribe, like, and share the show with any friends and colleagues who are looking for fresh ideas on how to create the ideal workplace for their business. And remember, if you need any HR support, get in touch with us at Insight HR. Whether it's conducting a complex workplace investigation, filling a gap by providing you with a virtual or an on-site HR resource, or providing advice via our HR support line, we'll help you resolve whatever human resources challenge your business is facing. Thanks, and see you soon.